stand. We have a new song and then a hymn that I know all of us know, so I want to hear you.
Oh, everybody? Let's pray. Dear God, amen. All right, you can have a seat. We do it like that because we come in here in all kinds of different ways. We have all kinds of things going on. Some of us are in full celebration and some of us are in full mourning, and we take all of that stuff and we lay it at the foot of Jesus. And that's what that whole silence is about. Sometimes we use our words to pray and sometimes we use our silence to pray. So we have two things, two more announcements that I wanted to talk to you about. The first one is our Easter, our resurrection Sunday and weekend situation is Friday. We'll get back to our Good Friday service again. So that's going to be on Zoom. Patricia's going to lead that. You will get the link in it this week in the email. If any of you aren't on the email and would like to be, let me know. You'll get that. If you don't get the email, or if you want to invite anybody who doesn't, just reach out to me. That's no problem. But we do that Sunday or Friday at 7. And then Sunday we'll be here for our resurrection service, okay? And then the following week, we will have a guest speaker. Her name is Sue. She was our pre-COVID speaker, and she will be our post-COVID speaker. So I can't wait to disconnect the memories in my head of her with the whole shutdown. The last thing is, as things start to ramp up, we're getting a lot more the demand. Spring is a different kind of season, so the demands of life and responsibilities that we have start to get bigger and bigger and bigger. It is the same with me, so we're going to put the prayer circle on hiatus for a little bit of while. So Tuesday at 7, there will be no prayer circle until further notice. But just before we get into this really quickly, as our responsibilities and our obligations and all of the plans we have and the things that we have to do, and as life starts to get a little bit faster, I want to encourage you to be where you are, okay? We saw a show the other day, and there were lots of people. Actually, it was the Blue Man Group. Has anybody ever heard of the Blue Man Group? It was terrific. But anyway, there were people on their phones all around us. There were people talking. There were people coming late. There was all kinds of this thing happening, and just wanted us all just to be right there, having this human experience all together. So as we start to have these things, whether they're whatever we have going on, just be right where we are, because the call of Jesus is to be fully present, not past. And the Sermon on the Mount is all about, we're not worrying, and we are not looking forward in worry, and we're not looking back in regret or any of that. We are right where we are. We are called to be fully present all the time, bring all that we are, all that we have at our space. That is also to say, today we will have this kind of thing, and then we will have communion, and I'd just like everybody to be here instead of thinking what we're having for lunch or eat more of Kathy's cake. All right, kids, you're free. Okay, we are in Sermon on the Mount. We are in Matthew 7. Home stretch. We're going to take a bit of a break, for the next couple of weeks, but then we'll come back, and I'm thinking that we'll only have 3 or 4 more weeks of the Sermon on the Mount. So we're in Matthew 7, and it's going to be really a really, really unfamiliar passage for all of us, okay? It's kind of hidden in there that you would have never really picked up. Okay, are you there? Matthew 7. Verse 1, there's lots of things that we just kind of glance over. This is one of them. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. Has anybody ever heard that? It's like a greatest hit. You know what I mean? Like if you've ever been to a show, there's the band plays the hit, and then everybody loses their mind. And it's like they've never heard any other songs. They just know the one that's on the radio. This is the one that's on the radio. Right? Even if you don't follow Jesus, you probably know, or know the Bible at all. Never open the Bible. You know this verse. Okay? You've probably had it used against you at some point, right? Somebody, don't judge me. Don't judge me. It's this favorite verse to throw in somebody's face don't judge me, or don't judge my life, or don't judge my truth, or my actions, or my behavior, and on and on and on. And what it's pointing to is this relativity, that right moves, that it's all a sliding scale, that these things move, and what's good for you is good for you, and what's good for me is good for me, and it continues to move, and it's the tolerance, and it's the acceptance of every single thing. Right? That's what all of this is pointing to, or at least, that's what it's been used for, right? So the questions, you know how we do this where we ask all the questions in the beginning, is this really what Jesus was saying? Does this mean we can never, ever mention right and wrong? Does this mean we can never come even anywhere close to stepping on anybody's toes for fear of feeling, of being judgmental? Which is really one of the biggest knocks you can say against a Christian ever. They're judgmental. Christians are judgmental. Or you're very judgy of everything, right? It's one of the dirtiest words in our culture. Would you agree? You're judgmental of everything. So that leads us to the next question. Is everything okay? Do we have to approve of every single thing? And what about abuse? What about violence? What about war? What about each opinion? Is each opinion exactly the same? What about each belief? What about our perspectives? What about our preferences? Are they all just the same? Is every idea and action to be equally valid? Is that what Jesus is saying? Right? And where do boundaries factor into this non-judgmentalism? What if I say, you can't be around me anymore? Don't judge me. You can't tell me. You're very judgmental, right? We can use that at any point. If I'm toxic to you and you separate yourself from me, are you judging me? Is that what Jesus is talking about? Where is the line? Well, better question, is there a line? So all of these things are really, really interesting. And once we start asking these questions and how the verse has been used, then there's this verse. Stop judging by mere appearances, but instead judge correctly. That's in the Bible too. Can anybody guess who said that? Jesus said that. Jesus said, but instead judge correctly. So what are we doing? Now we're getting into something, right? Later on in this very same sermon, he will talk about false prophets, and he'll talk about good fruit and bad fruit and being able to tell the difference. Isn't that crazy? What does all of this mean? Alyssa Childers says, literally everyone judges. We all make judgments about people. And when we do that, we make judgments about things, we make judgments about actions, we make judgments about ideas. We all make judgments about people every single day. It would be beyond illogical and sometimes unsafe to not judge. Plus, To even tell someone they shouldn't judge is to judge that they're judging, which is considered judgmental, which requires making a judgment about all the judging. Right? So now what? Now what? What does this verse even mean? So what's judgment? The word for judgment that is used here is krino. Krino, easy one, right? Krino. It means to judge or decide. Properly to separate or distinguish. We're cool so far, right? I.e. judge. Come to a choice, decision, or judgment by making a judgment. I always really like when they use the word in the definition. I really like that. Either positive, a verdict in favor of, or negative, right? Which rejects or condemns. Of those who act the part of judges or arbiters in the matters of common life or pass judgment on the deeds and words of others universally and without case. Now, all of that sounds okay, but what we're mostly talking about was one little word that came up there, and what we're mostly talking about is condemnation. Okay? So, we're going to get back to that. Then there's a different word, and the word is discernment. Has anybody ever heard the word discernment? Now, the word discernment is diakrino. Okay, diakrino. They're different. You hear krino still in it, but it's diakrino. So it's a little bit different. It's a different word. And what it means is to distinguish, to judge, separate, distinguish, discern one thing from another, properly investigate, judge. It's the same definition. Yet, we've decided that they're very different, haven't we? Because discernment is really, really seen as a good thing, isn't it? If you say you're very discerning, that's a good thing. If you say you're very judgy, that's a bad thing, even though the definitions are practically the same, except for that one word, that one word. So we're going to come back to this, okay? I promise. All day we're talking judgment, so we'll come back to this. Verse 2, Matthew 7, 2. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it'll be measured to you, which sounds an awful lot like, forgive us as we have been forgiven, right? Or, forgive us our trespasses as we have forgiven those who trespass against us. There is a passage in Matthew 18, which I'm not going to read all of, but it's that thing when the king decides to bring his servants into account, and the one guy owes the king a bazillion dollars, right? And he can't pay it, and the king forgives him. And then he goes right outside, and the guy who owes him $5 can't pay him. He says, you're back in jail. They both say the same thing to try and get out of the debt, but one holds it, and the other one doesn't, okay? And at the end, that's what my heavenly Father will do to you if you refuse to forgive your brothers and sisters from your heart. This parable of the unforgiving debtor is kind of, if you forgive, you'll be forgiven. If you don't forgive, you won't be forgiven. And this sounds exactly like that, doesn't it? Right? In the same way you judge others, you will be judged. With the measure you use, it'll be measured to you. It's that idea of books that we're talking about. There's credits and debits. Right? What we put it, we're looking at fairness. Right? What we choose, and what we choose, we will receive. Okay? Do we want to be judged harshly, universally, and without case? No. Why would we judge universally and without case harshly? Do we want to be, the one word that we're talking about, condemned? Or do we want mercy, forgiveness, and kindness? The thing about Jesus is we get the rules that we choose. That's what this is talking about. Whatever rules you want to play by. And all of the Sermon on the Mount is an invitation into a new way of life. We can choose that life, or we can choose the same life that we've always lived. We can choose a life of transactionalism where, what have you done for me lately? We can do that. Running on the wheel, trying to prove ourselves, trying to earn all of this. Or we can choose grace. But we can't just choose grace. We have to give grace too. Right? We can't just choose to be forgiven. We have to forgive too. Okay? We decide the rules of the game. It's like house rules. In the house, you play a game and you go, well, we're not going to play by that. Everybody agrees to play by that. Like, I can't say, or we're playing Monopoly. I can't say, all right, when I pass go, I get all the 500s. But when you pass go, you get 200. You can't have that. It's all the same. It's all the same, which is what Jesus is talking about here. So then he continues on. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. This specks and logs situation. Think about the Bible. Just a funny story. I was reading this thing, and I mentioned it in the car yesterday, and my boys are both going, what? And I go, Bible's a weird book, right? And they go, really super weird. We'll talk about it in a couple weeks. One of those stories will come up. But it's a super weird book, and the thing is, we miss it. Because we've read it all the time, we totally miss all this stuff. This is a difficult passage. I'm not pretending otherwise. But it's also two places where Jesus is as funny as he's ever been. It's funny, too. And it's like a performance art. This is a plank. Imagine if I have this plank in my eye. See, that's funny. Now, say I have it in my eye here, and I say, Sam, you have a little something in your eye. But I can't get close to him because I'll hit him with this, with the plank that's in. See, that's funny. And we just forget that that's funny. And the people that are around him would go, that's kind of fun. That's something you remember. Probably then the rest of today, you forget everything else I say, but you'll remember this. And you'll remember a thing I'm going to do later because it continues to be funny. Okay? So there's a plank in our eye, and we're saying there's a speck in yours. And that's funny. Like how you use the absurd to illustrate the absurd. Okay? So mostly, those who are least self-aware are the most judgmental. Would you agree with me? Right? Like if I say, man, she's so selfish, and I'm the most selfish among us. Right? That's how it usually works, right? The things that bother you the most in people are the things that are true about you, usually. Like, you got that little thing in your eye, while I have a thing in my eye, right? Like if I'd say, man, that guy eats a lot of cake, right? That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. That's what Jesus is talking about here. That's what hypocrisy is. Do you know, and I'm sure that you do, I'm sure that you know, the things that we are most sensitive and unforgiving in others is the thing that are the closest mirror to ourselves. We all know that, right? Would you? Can't we say that? The things that push our buttons the most. You have that person who drives you crazy. That we all know why. Because they're just like us. They're just like us. If given the choice, I'm the laziest guy on earth. If given the choice, if I just follow how I am deep down, I'm the laziest guy you know. I wouldn't do anything at all, ever. And when my boys are the hint of lazy, I go, gosh, you can't be so lazy. And it drives me crazy because I know I'm right on the edge of being that lazy. So this all is working in here. So let's move on from that. Let's sit for that for another day. But on the one hand, this judgment, on the one hand, for us, for the judge, it's about hypocrisy. And hypocrisy is acting. Right? It's changing who we are in different situations. It's pretending we're something different. It's image creation, it's arrogance, and it's self-righteousness. Are those good things? Are those things that you would like to be described? Like if you're like, what do you think of Sylvia? And you go, she's so self-righteous. Would you like that? No, I don't know. No. Or like, how about Joy? Do you know Joy? Yeah, she's super arrogant. Is that good? Right. We don't like any of those, but that's what judging is. That's what judging does. That's what it does in the heart of the judge. Right? And on the other hand, for them, you are devaluing them. You are minimizing them. It's a little bit like the word for sex and porneia, where you take a big person and you reduce them to one thing about them. We do that most often, I'd say, with sex, right? We reduce them to their what they are physically or anything like that, right? We take somebody and we reduce them into something very, very small. It's like in the scriptures when they say, Jesus, you shouldn't be with her. Do you know what kind of woman she is? That's taking a woman who's somebody's daughter, who's somebody's sister, who's got dreams and hopes and thoughts and opinions and saying, she does this, and that's all she is. That's what judgment does. Judgment takes somebody who's a full 100% of a human being and saying, that 6% is all they are. Is all they are. And that's where we get into things like condemnation. And judgment, a way we can think of judgment is putting someone in a cell. Okay, you with me so far? Here's the most important part of that. And throwing the key away. That's what it is. That's what it is. It's we reduce it and we start talking about someone's essence. We are no longer talking about behavior. we are no longer talking about actions. We are talking about who they are at their deepest level, who they are and who they will always be. That is what judgment is. You with me? So, like all things, most things, there's damage, real significant damage to the judge and to the judged, right? Everything is a mess here. Everything is a mess, and judging someone does as much damage to our hearts as it does to the ones we're judging. And if you've ever been judged, you know the damage that it does to your own heart and your own well-being and all that stuff. Now, that's judgment. Discernment, another word for discernment that we could use is wisdom. Right? And there's two words we're going to talk about with that kind of wisdom of discernment and why they're different. One is boundaries. Okay? There is abuse, there is toxicity, and there's honesty in that. Right? You know, there are people that should not be trusted with you, who are not careful with you, who will damage you, who will go out of their way to hurt you. Do you agree? Have you been a part of this? Okay? And in that case, there needs to be a boundary because there is an honor and a dignity to you. You are not the carpet. You are not the carpet for people to just walk all over and say, "You can't judge me. You can't judge me. I should get to keep doing this to you. I should get to keep damaging you, hurting you, inflicting pain." Right? That is not what Jesus is saying, and he has never said that. Never, 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 never. Look through the Bible. Never, never did he say, "Well, I guess you could say the situation with Hosea and Gomer might be a situation like that, and if you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, talk to me later." But that could be something. But mostly, Jesus cares for you, loves you beyond reason, and does not want someone hurting you over and over and over. Okay? Are we tracking? Okay. Second word is consequences, which means others are free and encouraged to use their boundaries as well on us. They're not judging us just because we don't like it. They're not judging us because they're calling into question our behaviors. That's not judgment, necessarily. There are consequences to our actions. If I hurt Sam over and over and over and over and over, and he says, "I can't let you hurt me anymore," he's not judging me. There's consequences for my action, right? You with me? Okay. On that. This is an aside. This is that thing where you say, "You're in my living room," okay? Addiction, eating disorders, abusive relationships, any number of things. Sometimes judgment and confrontation is the most loving thing we can do, right? It is the most courageous and bold thing we can do. If someone is being damaged, if someone is getting abused, the most loving thing we can do is to judge that behavior as exactly what it is, right? And say those words that I still can't get over to this day. It was the thing that broke my heart when I was first starting to fall in love with Jesus. "You don't have to live that way. You don't have to live like that." Because we grow up believing that we've got to be nice to everybody and we have to be the carpet. And then somebody says to you, "You know what? You're better than that. There's the honor and the dignity to being you, so you don't have to live like that." And then you go, "I don't? Wow. I mean that much?" So sometimes judgment can be the most important thing. This passage ends with, don't forget this, the brother or sister does have a speck in their eye. There is a speck in their eye, and this passage ends with us helping to remove it. That's what the church is. That's what the church is. "Hey, man, you got that thing. Let me help you. Let me help you take it out. Isn't that a cool thing? Isn't that a cool thing? You're hurting. You're hurting you with this. How about if we stop that? And you know how we can, the AA movement's the best with this. Call me up. You're trapped in this addiction. Step one, you're powerless. You're powerless to do anything about it. So you have somebody else who comes alongside of you and says, you're in this addiction. You're powerless to this. Let's do it together. Call me anytime. That's the church. That's the church. And that's this passage. It's not just never saying anything, because that's not loving at all. That's not loving at all to watch someone be hurt over and over and over. That's not loving. Or to watch somebody else hurt somebody. The abuser is just as damaged, and to give that invitation to them that says, hey, you don't have to live like this. You're better than that. This judgment has been twisted to where we can never say you're better than that. Okay, I'm going to be done with that. What we're talking about here is control. This is the point of all of this. This entire passage is actually about control. Worry, what we talked about last week, worry was our attempt to control ourselves, our lives, and our environments, right? That's how we attempt to control the things around us that are pushing on us, okay? That's worry. Now we move on. Now this is when this passage is going to start to hurt us, I believe. And the next one even more so. This is how we attempt to control other people. Usually, we use this tactic to influence or coerce somebody else to behave the way we want them to do the things that we want them to. And to get them to do that, we scorn them. And this is where it really gets you. You will withhold things, or more importantly, yourself. If you're not going to behave the way I want you to, we're not talking abuse anymore. You know, God bless you. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm going to withhold me or these things until you do what I want you to do. We withhold things, privileges, ourselves. We condescend. We belittle and we shame to try and get people to walk the way we want them to. I know that hurts. That hurts. Because we use that like a tool, like a weapon. Judgment is how we control others through negative actions, through negative means. Just sit with that for a second while I get this pig. Don't give to dogs what's sacred. Don't throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they'll trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. The Bible's a weird book, right? How'd that go? Not so good. Is a pearl a good thing? Yes. Yes, it's valuable. It's beautiful. Right? They're great. Pearls are great. Are sacred things good? Yes. They're great, right? They're great. But giving these good things, throwing these very, very good things at pigs, the pig doesn't have any idea what to do with it. See, again, this is funny. This is funny because that's ridiculous. Why would you ever give a pearl to a pig in the first place? And the thing is, why we keep this on all the time is because I would guess, since we are all really, really great people, you're my favorite people in the world. Since we're all really, really great people, I would say that this is a real concern of ours. The thing about what Jesus is saying is pigs don't know what to do with them. pigs can't wear them. They'll just trample all over them, right? Right? Have you ever given a Bible to your friends or family members who don't read them, who don't go to church, who don't really follow Jesus at all? Has anybody ever done that more than once to the same person? 3 years in a row, I know, Joy, 3 years in a row I gave my sister a Bible. Because I thought if she just had the right translation, she'd like that. I think if you'd open them today, any of the three, if they're still in the house, hopefully she donated them. But if they're still in the house and you'd open them, it would probably go. You would crack the spine a little bit because I can't imagine that they've ever been opened. Have you ever given Christian music or books as gifts to people who don't read or listen to them? This is how we control others, how we attempt to control others through positive actions. If we can have the Bible study at your house, I'll bring the food. Well, what if I don't? What if I don't want a Bible study, but I really want the food? What if I really want you to come over and eat a meal together? Well, if we can read the Bible during it, that's throwing pearls. That's throwing pearls. Dallas Willard says, this reflects our efforts to correct and control others by pouring out our good things that our audience is not ready for and that our seemingly good intentions will ultimately yield anger, resentment, and attack by the audience. Has that been anyone's experience? When you just keep giving them, when you keep inviting them to church, and they finally go, I don't want to come to your church! I'm glad Angel's not here. I dated a girl in college once, and she wanted me to go to church, and she kept asking. And she kept, now, just a side note, Angel asked me twice, and on the second one I said, I really don't want to go to church. And she said, okay, then we're not dating. And I said, I really would love to go to your church. And see how things are. But there was this person who was after me about Jesus. And I went, I don't want anything to do with this, and I don't want anything to do with you. I was the pig. I wasn't there. And I'm still the pig. I'm still the pig in a lot of different things. Some people give me a lot of really nice things that I don't want to do, that I'm not ready for. My sister keeps talking to me about veganism. And vegetarianism, maybe it's a really good thing. She means it as a really good thing. I don't want to be a vegetarian. I'm the pig. Dallas Willer continues, this turns the analogy into one that exposes one's self-superiority in thinking the other needs the unbidden advice. All of this comes back to self-righteousness and arrogance. I know what's good for you. Has that ever worked out well for anybody to say, I know what you need and what you want? I know better for you. Ugh. So, this passage isn't an awesome feel-good passage, is it? Because probably we're going, man, I do that. I wish I didn't do that, right? Oh, man, I just gave a Bible again. You know, that kind of thing. It is an invitation, just like the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, it is an invitation to examine our own hearts, our motivation. Is there a speck in our own eye, or is there a plank in our own eye? And I would suggest that the little speck that's in Sam's eye is far less significant than the arrogance and self-righteousness that is the plank in my own and the hypocrisy that's the plank in my own. Right? Are we doing that? Is there a plank in our own eye? Are we throwing pearls to those who just don't want pearls? Are we, get ready, it's the worst question, are we trying to control? Are we trying to control everybody and everything and getting our, it's a word that starts with an I. It's a church word that starts with an I, and it rhymes with bridolatry. Getting our idolatry all over everybody. That's what this is. That's all that this is. It's saying, I'm in charge. I know better. Follow me. This is actually a call to respect. This is a total call to respect. To respect them, to respect their journey, and ultimately to respect Jesus. If I'm trying to control you that hard, you know what I'm doing? I'm saying that Jesus doesn't have you in his hands. I'm not saying Jesus has, I'm saying Jesus doesn't know what he's doing with you. And I can do it. Right? That's what I'm saying. This is a call to trust him with them. Right? Or with it. When we talk about worry, trust Jesus with it. Anytime we're controlling anything, we are saying Jesus can't be trusted. And I didn't like to say that several weeks ago, and I really don't like to say it now. So, maybe it's time for discernment with love. Right? Don't ever forget that. Don't ever forget the last part of that. With love. But maybe it's time for discernment. Maybe it's time for boundaries. Maybe it's time for consequences. Right? Maybe it's time to gently, kindly give pearls with love. We only know when it's time. We only know if the answer to those are yes. If maybe it is time. We only know that when we're seeking him first. Remember last week? Seek him first. We only know that when we're seeking him first and only. We only know that when we're living our lives with him. When we have him as our number one, instead of me, right? Instead of myself, when we have him as the number one, when he's our head, when he's our guide, when we're walking hand in hand in relationship, loving him and loving each other. See what I mean? See how this greatest hits verse that's been misused and abused over and over and over and over is an invitation into a whole new way to live. A whole new way to live for each other, for God, and an economy instead of transaction. It is an economy of grace and love. Cool, right? So when we're saying don't judge, what we're saying is trust God. When we're saying don't throw your pearls to pigs, we're saying trust God. When we're saying don't control everything, we are saying trust God and seek him first. And he uses the funny, absurd things to make it stick. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week. Because what better way to